Welcome to Off Message. I'm Isaac Dovan. Today's guest, Linda McMahon, small business administrator, and you may know her from her previous career running the Worldwide Wrestling Entertainment Company, and of course running for Senate in Connecticut twice. On Monday, President Trump complained on Twitter about Democrats holding up his nominees, but McMahon, who is the cabinet member who has the closest and longest personal relationship with him, told me that she was dealing with what she called a bottleneck from the West Wing that's kept her from staffing up and slowed down her work. She said, "We're not even staffed up to where we need to be or where we were to do a lot of our regular activities." And she said, look, there are employees that she has there who are working long hours, and there are people serving and acting jobs, and they're getting some of it done, but it is slowing things down. She also told this really compelling story of her own small business career that started when she and her husband had no money, actually declared bankruptcy, standing in the driveway of their house watching her car be repossessed while she held her son, Shane McMahon, who now is well known through the wrestling world. She did not want to be small business administrator originally. She came in to meet with Trump during the transition thinking that she wanted to be commerce secretary, but Trump was the one who brought up the SBA job with her, and she's really taken to it. She moved to Washington and has been meeting and talking with all the district directors. Is this whole plan that she got into about how she's going to try to spread the word about what the Small Business Administration does, because she says if she had known about it when she was getting her business off the ground, probably would have been a lot easier. Remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. Follow me on Twitter and on Facebook at Isaac Dovere, and email me at isaac@politico.com. Keep those emails coming. A lot of great suggestions have been coming in on what those future guests should be, what you'd like to hear us doing. And you will hear in the coming weeks people like Terry McAuliffe, Governor of Virginia, Chad Griffin from the Human Rights Campaign, and a lot of other great guests. But before we get to today's episode, I want to give a plug for my friend and editor Carrie Budoff-Brown's podcast, Women Rule. Carrie sat down for an interview with Carly Fiorina. Remember her? That comes out this Wednesday, June 7th. You don't want to miss it. Subscribe to Women Rule on iTunes or whatever your favorite podcast platform is so that you have it right when it comes out Wednesday morning. And now, our conversation with Linda McMahon. You are a rarity in Washington in that you are one of the people who's known Donald Trump a really long time. And actually known him. Tell me about the first time you met him. You remember?
I do. The first time, my recollection is the first time that I met President Trump, Vince and I were his guests at a Rolling Stones concert. I'm trying to think of what the stadium was called. It was the Brendan Byrne Arena and the accompanying, which is now MetLife Stadium. Mm-hmm. So it was a wonderful outdoor concert, and we were his guests, and we had an incredible amount of fun.
You're a big Stones fan?
Yes, I love the Stones.
And is President Trump a big Stones fan?
I don't know.
I mean, he plays that song, "You Can't Always Get What You Want," right?
I don't know if he's a big Stones fan, but he was clearly our host that night at the concert, so we enjoyed it very much.
And usually a relationship doesn't start with an invitation to a Rolling Stones concert, so how did that come about?
I think it came about through my husband, Vince McMahon, and President Trump. They'd known each other. I don't think we'd had any business and interaction at the time. But one of our, I think it was WrestleMania events at the Trump Casino in Atlantic mm-hmm. City. I quite frankly can't remember if that was before. It had to be before when I met him at the Rolling Stones concert, because I clearly saw him and met him at our event there in New Jersey.
And is he just like singing along to the songs, rocking out?
No, we were his guests, but he had other guests, and we had friends who were with us, so we talked, you know, a little bit back and forth. But I was rocking out to the music. I was singing the lyrics, standing up, really enjoying watching Mick Jagger run up all around everywhere. He was just the most amazing performer.
And you guys haven't like hit the road to go to Stones concerts?
No.
What? I know you've spoken in the past about how he was always clearly a patriot and committed to the things that he believes in the country. But was he in those? It's 20 years ago we're talking, a little bit more than that.
A little more than 20. Yeah.
Was he obviously a politician, a president at that point?
Well, look, I wasn't running for the Senate 20 or 25 years ago. He wasn't running for president. I think we were both really heavily involved, you know, in our businesses. I can tell you that he was a really good partner for the couple of events that we did on his properties. He was involved a bit later on. In fact, he is the only president of the United States to have been inducted into the World Wrestling Entertainment Hall of Fame. So he did have a couple of interactions, you know, continuing. And he's a loyal friend, always a straight shooter, an incredible partner, and really did, I think, really did even more than his share when we were on his properties to make sure that WWE was well taken care of, even down to our crew, you know, inviting them to be in the employee cafeteria, and just a really good, strong partner.
It seems like one of the things that, and there are several things you have in common with him, but in thinking about the transitions that both of you made into politics, when you were running for Senate, you had to deal with all the time people playing wrestling clips and not taking you seriously, even as you were putting yourself forward as not someone who was in the ring, but as someone who was running the business. He had other things from his own career that people didn't take him seriously as a politician. Is that something you talked about at all with him, or that you see that he had to face in a way that was like what you did?
No, he and I haven't talked about that. Only thing I can say about him is he won. Interestingly, when I was running, I ran on some of the very same issues that are so prevalent today. I ran on jobs in the economy. Mm-hmm. I ran on tax reform. And because I believe so strongly then as I do now that these are the prevailing things that are going on with our economy. And I also ran on small businesses being, you know, the backbone of the economy. So it's interesting that I am in a place today able, hopefully, to have an impact on the very thing that I talked about so much when I was running, which was making sure that small businesses, you know, can have the access to capital they need, the counseling that they need, and the opportunities, you know, for government contracting to really, you know, exceed and excel, because they are the backbone of the economy. So it's interesting that I ran on the same things as a senator that are still the issues that we have to address today.
Well, it wasn't so long ago that you ran for Senate, these issues.
Well, sometimes it feels like a long time ago, and then sometimes it feels like yesterday.
You've been on the job for a little more than 3 months at this point.
I was sworn in February 14th, Valentine's Day. So, and I came to work the next day.
How right, from what you've seen in this building and in the government overall, was President Trump about the need that he talked about on the campaign trail to just completely revamp the government, that there's an entrenched, you know, all the stuff with the swamp and bureaucracy. Have you seen day to day that there is that need to sort of rip things out root and branch?
Well, speaking really just in here in SBA, I can't see that I've seen things relative to draining the swamp here. But what SBA, to its credit, before I got here during the transition and the transition team that was in, already started looking at making sure the different departments in SBA were running, you know, relatively lean. So it was a really good team, and some of that team stayed. I asked them, you know, mm-hmm. to stay, and they've been excellent. So when the president's executive order came about looking at size of government, going through agencies, making sure you didn't have duplicative departments, et cetera, we were already ahead of that curve. And we've continued to be ahead of that curve. As a matter of fact, I think there were even a few notes taken at a recent meeting at the White House about things that SBA had done that other agencies, you know, ought to think about doing and about how they're restructuring. So I think we've been ahead of that curve. We are constantly looking at our programs here. We're eliminating programs that I think are duplicative. And there are some, and we'll just operate, as I said, they're duplicative, so we already had the means to take care of them in other ways.
So here, everything is basically fine. It's on the right track. It's you don't think that there's more that needs to be done?
Well, there's always a lot more that needs to be done, and I can.
But sort of compared to other parts of the government, is what you're...
Well, I'm not in other parts of the
sure.
government, so I'm really focused on SBA and what we're doing here. What I hear from other cabinet members, what I continue to hear, you know, from the president is, we are streamlining. We are going to operate more efficiently. I think his budget is dictating that. So I feel good about the direction that the government is taking.
I mean, I
will challenge you just in this way. Often when you ask people in the government if there are problems in the way government works, they'll say, well, my agency is running fine.
Well, what else do you expect me to say?
Well, given what he was talking about during the campaign and what he's continued talking about as president of the need to change the government, it's interesting that you say that here things are where they need to be. That means that you were left with, from the Obama administration, from the administrations before, things moving on the right trajectory as it relates to SBA.
Well, SBA has clear programs. Our loan programs, our 7A programs, our 504, our 8A programs, the SBDCs that we work with, the SBIR programs that we're working with, all these programs have been in place for a good period of time. And they are operating well, and they have been through different administrations. So, and I'm not sure quite when a couple of them came on board during what, you know, administration
right.
they came on board. So what we continue to look at is, are we as effectively as we can operating? For instance, you know, SBA guarantees loans. Well, we want to make sure that our lenders in the marketplace are the ones who are servicing the customers in the best way. They qualify the borrower. Not SBA. So we want to make sure that we constantly reevaluate our lenders. I believe they're certified for a 3-year period, but I'd want to double check that. And so during that 3-year period, we want to go in and make sure that they are doing what they should be doing, you know, relative to those loans. But from my vantage point, relative to your question, there is a good, smooth operational flow here at SBA. We are understaffed at the moment. We're not even staffed up to, you know, where we need to be or where we were to do a lot of our regular activities. My deputy has now been voted out of committee, finally, and hopefully she will join us in the next week or two. But that's been a long process.
But that's not just the, that's an important position to have filled, but that's not the only staff that you need. What do you attribute that to, that you're understaffed still? We're 4 months into the administration.
Well, I think a lot of the staffing that I'm talking about does have to have White House approval.
So is it the White House not moving things through?
I think there's some. I think there's been some bottleneck. You know, they're trying to fill a lot of roles at one time, and it's a lot of people, you know, to process. But we've gotten very good response, you know, from the White House. And my deputy actually is like the third or fourth deputy that's moved through. So we've I think done pretty well in the time frame, but there would be, you know, your communication, the head of your communications division, our general counsel, inspector general position here, our advocacy attorney. All of those are White House approvals, and they're big jobs, so that the positions underneath them, you know, are not being able to be filled. Some of them are filled with acting people who
right.
who are here and are doing, you know, a good job. But till you have that leader in that position who can really manage and evaluate the work that's being done, you do have a little bit of a time gap there.
No, but as you point out, this is a problem throughout the administration right now, that a lot of people who are in positions like yours are saying, well, we don't have our full staff and we're waiting on the White House for it. And often the response that comes out of the White House is to complain that the Senate isn't moving people through. Some of those people do need to get moved through the mm-hmm. Senate, like your deputy.
Right.
But some of them just
and
need
advocacy
to,
and the IG.
Right. So what effect does that have, though, in the bottleneck that's going on at the White House that you talked about, which is in part because they in the West Wing, they haven't fully staffed up. So there are fewer people who are managing the staffing decisions that relate to the rest of the administration. It does slow down the work that's going on here somewhat, right?
Well, I don't know that it slows it down as much as it requires that there are many more people working very long hours. We will operate much better when we're fully staffed. We won't operate to the full staff levels that the prior administration did, simply because we do have some budget cuts, but we are doing more with less. You know, and if you've been the CEO of a company, especially a public company, you understand how you're governed a little bit more there of driving more towards the bottom line, but here we're driving towards efficiencies. And I operate this agency on two words, and I drive them every single day, and that is effective and efficient. And if it doesn't fall under those two words, then it really needs to be evaluated. And along with that then comes accountability.
Have you talked to the president or to anybody else in the West Wing about the need to speed up the process a little bit so that some of your staffers can maybe get home a little bit earlier?
Well, I think you're kind of dwelling on an issue that may not be as big of a problem as we're trying to make it. I do think that from our perspective, yes, I would certainly like to see some things move through a little bit quicker. But I think we now have... I think we've gotten over the hump now with the deputy and the head of our communications. Our general counsel starts, I think, next week, and so we're really in good stead with pretty much our key positions now.
You and your husband built a small business into a multi-million dollar business. Did you ever, in building the business, have any interaction with the SBA? This agency that you're now running, or was that it only later in life that you learned what the Small Business Administration was?
Much later in life, really only a couple of years ago. And I've often said, as I've been giving talks relative to SBA, I wish I had known about SBA, which I believe is also one of the issues that I'm confronting today, is that SBA does so much the general public is not aware of. So part of what I want to do here is broaden a marketing campaign to really let the general public know what SBA does. You think SBA and you think loans. Well, SBA really is an integral part of counseling and mentorship as it is in guaranteeing loans, you know, that banks are making. And I have found building my own business, a company that I started before I came to SBA, which is called Women's Leadership Live, mm-hmm. that it's still up and running, but I had to resign and leave. What you find is that as much as the need is for access to capital for entrepreneurs, they really do need that counseling. They need mentoring. Many of them don't know how to write a business plan. They really don't know how to do cash flow management. And so those are a lot of, you know, the basic things that startups really need. Then you load on top of that taxes that many of them aren't aware that they might have to pay, or fees that they might have to pay in order to get into business and all those things. So what SBA does in its districts, through its women's business centers, through its SCORE chapters, and SCORE is an organization of volunteers who are ex-executives who come into their own centers as well as SBA centers and counsel and mentor startups or ongoing businesses that now need to transition to go to the next level. So what SBA does is so much bigger and broader than loans, and I really want to get that message and that word out.
You, before you guys built it into the multi-million dollar business, before it was really a business, you guys went bankrupt. How does that experience inform the way that you think about things like the loan guarantees and the work that you need to be doing now to reach out to the businesses?
I think it informs me more on the side of the entrepreneur than it does relative to, you know, the lender.
Tell me about the experience of being bankrupt and thinking, okay, how do we get from being in the hole here to being in a successful entrepreneur situation?
Well, when we went bankrupt, the cause of our bankruptcy was not the wrestling business at that particular. Vince was a promoter of wrestling events and also an employee of Capital Wrestling Corporation, which was his father's mm-hmm. company as an announcer. And we had invested money. It sounds like we had a lot of money. We didn't. But we had, you know, we had a few hundred dollars extra, maybe a few thousand dollars extra. And our accountant at the time advised, he said, you know, you shouldn't have all your eggs in one basket. And, you know, I have a couple of things over here that I think would be good for you to invest in. And we invested in those. One was a construction company. We didn't know anything about it. And we personally signed. There's a mistake I would advise any budding entrepreneur. Personally signed, you know, for some loans. And We didn't have very good partners. They didn't live up to their end of the agreement. We were kind of stuck. And after more than a year of paying off all this all on our own, we just couldn't do it anymore. So we did file for bankruptcy to get out from under, you know, that burden.
And we're on food stamps at one point, right?
Well, that was really, really early on when we were right out of college. Okay. And that was for a week.
Yeah, just a week on food stamps.
It was a week on food stamps. And no, or it might have been 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then I had the opportunity to earn some more money. And I said, I just, you know, we can make this work without food stamps. And so Vince was working about 90 hours a week. Mm-hmm. And then I had an opportunity to go to work here in Washington. Well, we lived in Washington at Covington and Burling as a receptionist. And so I was doing that for a while, too. But we went bankrupt. Our son Shane was 6, and I was pregnant with our second child. And our house was auctioned off, and my car was repossessed in the driveway. So when I talk to people who are going, you know what, I could lose everything. Yeah, well, let me tell you how not to do that. Here are some things to avoid along the way. And what you always have to look at as an entrepreneur, you believe so much in what you want to do, and you're taking a risk. And sometimes you are willing to risk about everything you have, but I would advise, balance your downside. You know, what can you really afford to lose and not lose everything? Keep a little bit set aside to do that, because it may not be the winner that you think. And you might not be able to keep as many balls in the air. And it's all about managing your cash flow. And when you're looking at, wow, this week we did really well, but you know what? You might not do that well next week. So you have to really manage that cash flow.
The path from the car being repossessed in the driveway to getting the wrestling business really off the ground is, I think, would be one that a lot of the small businesses out there would be mm-hmm. interested in. Maybe if they're not, they may not have already lost their cars, but a lot of entrepreneurs starting out are struggling to make things work. So what is that? How do you go from, I'm sure that was a depressing day when the car disappeared, right?
It was a very depressing day when they, you know, you're standing there with your child and they pull up and they take your car away. It's a humbling experience, and it's incredibly embarrassing in your neighborhood to have your home.
That's a real, people often say it's a humbling experience when they win like an Oscar, but no, that's not a humbling experience. Having your car repossessed in your driveway in front of your child is a humbling experience.
That is an incredibly humbling experience. And the good news for us was that Vince was an employee of Capital Wrestling. So we had some money, you know, coming in, you know, from his job. And he was also really starting to promote more events for Capital Wrestling. But we had no credit cards. So in order for him to even be on the road or to stay in a hotel, we had two friends who will always, you know, really be grateful to, who loaned us their credit card, you know, so that he could rent a car while he was on the road and stay in a hotel. And so at that particular time, we were living in a Winnebago. Now our child, Stephanie, had been born. So we were living in a Winnebago with a West Highland Terrier and two children, and Vince and I, who slept in the back of the Winnebago on what was about a 2/3 size bed. So, you know, you rebuild. You just have to rebuild. You have to go on. I've often said it's really not how hard you're knocked down, but it's how you get up, you know, that makes a difference. And so you just have to keep putting one foot in front of the next. And we had the ability to have some income start to come in then, that when Stephanie was born, we were able to pay for that. Unlike when Shane was born, we had just gotten out of college when we just didn't have any money at all. So we've really been through some tough times. We've been through some building times, you know, with our business. And we've been incredibly, incredibly fortunate. We've worked hard. We had an opportunity that we were able to take advantage of with a business that did grow through a lot of vision. You know, to take it from a Northeastern regional company when we bought Vince's father's company, Capital Wrestling. And then we built it across the nation and then turned it into a global enterprise.
Does that, when you think about the small businesses that you're encountering in your job now, does that, you come from a different set of experiences than previous small business administrators have had. That, in particular, having been at the bottom and built it to a company that most people know, at least in some way, and certainly made you a lot of money along the way, how does that inform the decisions that you're making about priorities in the work that you're doing. Has it changed your thinking about things that the Small Business Administration was doing previously?
I think that my advice is, and what informs how I talk to people is, look, I know how that feels. I know what it's like to have to start talking to one creditor who's calling when you're trying to not pay the gas bill that month and you're just going to pay the electric bill, and you put them off for a little bit and you send them $10 and they're happy for a while. And you're trying to balance all of that while you've got a child and you've got a household and you've got a business that you're trying to get off the ground. And I said, I get all that. So it does inform my talking with them. But the fact that I can send them someplace to a district office or to a regional office, not me personally so much anymore,
sure.
But just to have them be aware that there is help and guidance, you know, for them. And sometimes that guidance is tough love. We're saying, you don't really have a good business model. Yeah. You don't have a good, solid business here. And here's why. There's too much competition for it. You are undercapitalized. Your idea is not that unique. You're not going to be able to gain that market share. But I wouldn't have anybody telling me that, you know, when Vince and I were first starting out. So we were just going market by market by market to build.
Are they surprised to hear you talk about the experiences that you had that they don't realize that you went through some of this stuff?
Many of them are. Now, a lot of them, because of who I am today, they've read my story.
Right.
But I never go into a group and talk about that there aren't some surprise faces. We never would have dreamed, you know, that and I am incredibly blessed to have had now the wealth that my husband and I have, you know, through our business. But boy, we know what the lean times were. And when I can talk about those with such feeling, because I've been there, it makes an impression on people who think, well, you know what? I'm struggling now, but I could also get that brass ring.
What's the conversation like when, after President Trump has won the election, that gets you to be in this job? Is it that you called him, he called you?
I'd been a strong supporter during his campaign, and reached out to him, you know, a couple of times words of encouragement. And
just like general words of encouragement,
general, you know, little notes. And he was kind enough when he was campaigning. It was Vince's birthday, and I'd send him a note, and he did a happy birthday greeting from his airplane when he was on his way to Iowa, you know, to campaign.
So this is early out.
Yeah, it's early out, and then, yeah, you know, and continuing on. So we had, you know, just a nice relationship to, you know, to drop a card to say thank you or this, that, or the other. And so I had a call to come in and talk to him. And I think Steve Bannon and Jared were both in the room, you know, when we were having our conversation. But when I came in, it was, we knew each other, we were friends, so right, it wasn't awkward. And it was a hug, and it was a hello, and how are you? And it was like, I really want to talk to you about this. And he said, would you be interested in serving? And I said, yes, I would. And I said, I had actually thought that I might have some skills that would, you know, that would be good in commerce or, mm-hmm, you know, in that area. And he said, I have something different in mind. He said, I would like for you to be the cabinet member for Small Business Administration. He said, I need you there. You've built it. You've been there. You've done it. You walk the talk. You talk the talk. And you understand what people are going through, but you also understand how important business is to the economy. He said, so I need someone who brings that to the table, and someone, you know, that I know and I know has been a success. He said, so would you consider doing this?
And how quickly do you say yes?
Right then.
Right then.
Yeah,
you didn't,
sure.
You didn't say that when, no, I talked to my family or anything like that?
No, because I knew going there to talk to him, there was this potential. And so we'd already talked about it. And,
but the potential was that he would offer you a job. You didn't know which job it,
right,
was.
Being, right, being asked to serve.
Right.
And that I was having that general conversation. And so actually Vince and I had talked very much about this when I ran for the Senate, because it was going to be, you know, a relocation to Washington, yeah, during the week. I'd go home on the weekends, but it would be that relocation. My children, it's a great time in my life to do this. My children are grown. I miss my grandchildren and my children, but they don't need me on a daily basis. And,
right,
so it's a good time in our lives. And we were both very committed to being able to give back. So
We have several podcasts at Politico. Another one is we call it Women Rule. You had the Women's Leadership Live company that you started. You mentioned another person who will be a guest coming up is Carly Fiorina, someone you know, someone you donated money to in her campaign.
Yes.
I'm going to turn the tables on us for as we get to the close here. What would you ask her? What's the question that you would have for her at this point and as she's considering her next moves?
I would just say that. What's next? What's next, Carly? You are, she and I have talked many times. And the first time we met, we talked on the phone because we both ran for the Senate.
Right.
My first time running was her first time running. And I had such incredible respect for what she went through. I mean, she, you know, she defeated cancer, but she campaigned with, you know, shaved head and all that. I mean, I had remarkable respect for her resilience and her grit, but also for her mind. That is one smart woman. I enjoyed meeting her and talking with her, and we just really just generalized about where we were in our lives, you know, that first time we met. And she was asking me about joining her on a grassroots fundraising campaign that she was starting at that particular time, and it didn't fit with what I wanted to be doing. But as she sat next to me, I said, "So, Carly, do you ever want to sit in the big chair?" She said, "Maybe. Time will tell." So I think now I'd say, what's next?
And what about you? Are you in for the long haul here? Are you done with politics? Are you done with campaigning? Are you done with donating? You were a huge donor to a lot of Republican causes. Are you still going to be writing those checks?
Well, to the extent that you're allowed ethically to do some of the contributing, I might not be as large a donor. I'm not sure. I haven't really thought about that. I've donated, I think, to a couple of local races since I've been in this office, because I actually wasn't quite sure what I was allowed to do there for a while. But I have no intent on running again. I did that twice for the Senate. I totally gave it everything I had. And I like what I'm doing. And when I signed up for this job, I signed up for the term.
But the money, the Crossroads, other Republican groups, you've been a big donor to them. Should they think that they need to probably expect to live without the checks from the McMahon family?
I think time will tell. Time will tell.
Let me ask you one.
Again, you know, I won't cross any ethical boundaries, though,
sure.
And I would always.
But is it different from an ethical boundary? I mean, that's
there. You know what? And I am not as clear always. Before I do anything, I just check with ethics. I figure that's be the best way not to get in any trouble. And it's little things like, for instance, I was invited to be a keynote speaker at a Lincoln Day dinner back in my home state in Connecticut. Well, I must have done a zillion Lincoln Day dinners. And so when I check with ethics, I could speak, but I could not speak in my official capacity as administrator. I could be introduced as the Honorable Linda McMahon, but I couldn't be a person on the host committee.
Right.
So there were a lot of different things that I was not aware of, but I just checked first to see what I could do. So there are a lot of things that I'm not aware of that I could or could not do, and I would just double check to make sure.
Let me ask you a last question, the one that I'm sure keeps you up at night. Should The Rock run for president?
Hey, I think that anyone who has the qualifications, you know, to run and has the fire in their belly, you know, to run, and they want to give it a shot, you know,
does he have the qualifications to run?
I don't know. I don't know if he does or not. I think we'd have to do some vetting. I know that he's certainly incredibly patriotic. He is. He's very dynamic. He is a patriot. He is totally committed, you know, to our country. Whether he has a serious bent for running for president, I don't know. he's the Rock.
He's the Rock. I asked you whether when you met Donald Trump, you thought that would be a future president. When you met Dwayne Johnson, did you think that's a...
I don't think you think about those things.
He hasn't come to you, I guess, to talk about political advice. But
The Rock? No.
Is there a world in which you can imagine President Dwayne Johnson, President Rock, President The Rock? Is that what it would be?
Listen, you know, there are worlds that I think happened and you wouldn't imagine that they had happened. But it's not one I think about. I'm in current day. I'm very happy with the president we have. And I want to do everything I can to help him be successful.
All right. Linda McMahon, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very much.